divine. Ain't nobody in town got a sweet little girl like mine.
There you have Roosevelt Sykes, and Fine and Brown is the name of that track from a Delmark issue called Raining in My Heart, there from Roosevelt Sykes. Plus, I heard from Blues King Harris, also known as Alfred Harris. That was the Great Lakes Boogie, recorded 1954 and on a disc LP entitled Harmonica Blues Kings, there from Alfred Harris. Up next, we're going to hear from Elmore James and his Broom Dusters, recording back in 1955, I believe. This is Wild About You, Baby. Elmore James here on the Deep Blues Hour.
I don't wanna lose you. Sugar, 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 sugar. the matter with you? Baby, please won't you tell me? 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 Baby, please won't you tell me that you love me and you never, never let me go? You're still good to me, baby, but you just don't act the same. You're still good to me, baby, but sugar, you just don't act the same. I done gone and started worrying. Worrying, is there another man? I got that worried feeling. And I don't know what to do. Yes, I got this worried feeling. Somebody tell me what to do. I got that lovesick fever. Feel like I'm coming down with the blues. Got that worried feeling.
feeling all blue down inside. I got that worried feeling, feeling all blue and down inside. Well, my heart is lonesome. Oh, I got chills all in my eyes. I'm going away, people. Find me a hoodoo man. I'm going way yonder somewhere. Got to talk to me a hoodoo man. Stop you from leaving, baby. I'm just trying to hold on to you as long as I can. Cause if she leave, it ain't gonna be the same.
Fine, slow rolling tune there from Jimmy Dawkins, entitled Cold Actions. That's on his Evidence release called Hotwire 81. Yeah, it came out in 1981 there from Jimmy Dawkins. We also heard from Jesse Belvin, the Blues Balladeer. It's his nickname, as well as the title of the specialty release. That was What's the Matter from Jesse Belvin. Enter the land of Twilight with DJ Owl every week, where we listen to vaporwave, video game music, anime music, ambient, dub reggae, dungeon synth, city pop, and more. It's every Friday from 1 to 3 p.m. here on WRCT. And Orworm. Have you ever had an Orworm? Well, tune in on Thursdays, 2 to 4, and you'll be left with one only here on WRCT. Let's get back into the music with Mr. J.B. Lenore. Here he is from his 1966 release entitled Vietnam Blues. This is the Tax-Paying Blues. J.B. Lenore here on the Deep Blues Hour.
Hey everybody, I am talking to you. I've been telling you, Judge, but this is not true. can pack me blue. Think about me and you. What the world are we gonna do? My money's gone. My phone is gone. The way things look, how can I be here alone? I got to take me.
To let take the fair. She want to leave me now for someone else. She's just young and wild. She don't understand. Your life can be sweet, baby. Baby, if I can speak.
than hell. I sit behind that old western hill. You know I wouldn't do a thing, not against my baby's will. And you know that's bad, I declare that's too black bad. I declare that's too black bad. You know my woman done quit me. Ooh, man, look at the whole round world is gray. You know she stopped writing, wouldn't even send me no kind of word. I said she wouldn't send me no kind of word. She turned a little old back on me about some old 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 thing she heard. But I'm going away, baby. I'm going to stay a great long time. I say I'm gonna stay a good long time. You know I'm coming back now, honey. Ooh, baby, until you change your mind. I wake up every morning feeling sick and bad. I say soon every morning I'll be feeling mighty sick and bad. Thinking about the old times, baby, that I once had. If I don't go crazy, I say I'm gonna lose my mind. I believe I'm gonna lose my mind. Cause I stayed worried, ooh, baby, bothered all the time. Looking here, baby, sitting right here on my knee. I said, sit right down on my knee. Well, I just want to tell you just how you've been doing. What do you want for me to do? I say, what do you want me to do? I've been doing all I can, honey, just trying to get along with you.
Tune from Sun House, also known as Eddie House. That was the Lowdown Dirty Dog Blues. That's from a collection of Rounder recordings they put out as part of a whole series called Deep River of Song. Sun House on the Mississippi disc of that collection. We also heard from John Brim, some fine Chicago blues from the 1950s that he was with Young and Wild. Let's hear from Honey Boy Edwards next. This is Just a Spoonful. Honey Boy Edwards here on the Deep Blues Hour.
I'll go to jail about a spoonful, just a spoonful, just a spoonful. I'll kill my mama about a spoonful. Kill my mama about a spoonful, just a spoonful, just a spoonful, just a spoonful. Slap that judge about a spoonful. Slap that judge about a spoonful. Just a spoonful, just a spoonful. Just a spoonful, just a
Pittsburgh and WRCT.org.
Folks, this is the twice impeached, criminally convicted felon in chief, Donald the Con Trump, signing an executive order to facilitate the right's long-standing goal of eliminating the Department of Education. That was always the goal of the Republicans and Project 2025. And so that's what they're doing, doing a ceremony in the East Room of the White House. This idiot Trump signed the order while flanked on each side by school children seated at desks. While the order recognizes that it would take an act of Congress to completely shutter the department, Trump directed Education Secretary Linda McMahon to do all she can to achieve that goal. The con man said the department will preserve useful functions like Pell Grants, Title I funding, and programs for students with disabilities. Do we have any audio of him talking? All right, so here's the deal. They're going to sit here, and what they're doing is, again, they want to completely gut the department. They've already laid off half of the employees. This is what they have always done and what they want to do. And again, this is what their goal has always been. My pal, Dr. Nola Haynes, she is Georgetown University School of Foreign Service out of D.C., political science, social media, political activist out of Knightdale, North Carolina. Reese Colbert, host of the Reese Colbert Show, Sirius XM Radio out of Washington, D.C. Reese, I'll start with you. I mean, bottom line is this here. This is always what they wanted to achieve. They are blaming the Federal Department of Education for the problem with education. I'm here in Texas right now. And in fact, I'm going to, we're going to have also on the show, I got a chance to chat with State Representative Jolanda Jones. And we talked about a couple of things. We talked about the voucher scam bill here in Texas. And we also talked about the Texas Education Agency takeover of the Houston Independent School District. But here's the whole deal. 90% of the funding in America for schools is state and local. So this idea that the problem with education is all because of the Department of Education is right-wing fiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, the right-wing education system has created the problem with us having lower literacy scores, lower math scores compared to other industrialized nations. Look, this is about undoing the progress since Brown versus Board of Education. This is about creating separate and unequal. It is about creating a caste system, or not creating, but entrenching a caste system in which wealthier people get to send their kids to better schools, in which underprivileged, and I use that in air quotes, underprivileged kids have no recourse for underinvestment in their areas, in their schools, where kids who have disabilities do not have any recourse in ensuring that they have equal access to education, whether that be learning disabilities or physical disabilities. And so this is about making it harder for the playing field to be leveled through education. It's also about eroding the middle class. It's about taking away investments like what Biden-Harris did by expanding public student loan forgiveness and other student loan forgiveness programs. And so this is a full-on assault on all of the mechanisms that have been put in place over decades to make education slightly more equitable in this country. The way to make more progress is not to undo the progress that's been made, but is to double down on it. And this is the exact opposite of that.
Nola, people really need to understand. And again, all of these crazy deranged people on the right, they literally have no clue. They don't even understand that the states that benefit the most from the Federal Department of Education are red states like Tennessee, South Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas. So they just want to just go ahead and cut their noses off despite their face.
Ooh, I am burning up about this issue. I knew it was coming. It's here. You know, as an educator, this is definitely something that my chats have been going off about all day. But I've been thinking a lot about this in that same context, Roland, but also in the context of politics. Last night I did a live and I had a question asked about what is a populist? What does populism mean? And what does it mean when people say that Donald Trump is a populist? Basically, at the end of the day, it benefits a populist wannabe dictator, wannabe autocrat to have an uneducated permanent class. That benefits him. MSNBC did some interesting polling today around white voters. And to no one's shock, most of Trump's supporters were white males who were uneducated. That shocks no one. And while more white women do not support Donald Trump, the ones that do have not received at the very least a four-year degree. So this is all part of the playbook. There's nothing new here. Donald Trump is not reinventing the wheel. And it's very easy to convince people that those coastal elites, those Northerners, and I can't tell you how many times I've been hearing that lately. I feel like I've been transported in some sort of time machine and we've gone backwards in time. Like people actually using terms like Yankees and Northerners. What? Where are we? But anyway, my point is, they are genuinely convinced that education leads that we are the permanent enemy, and somehow that they are in on something, that they know something that we don't know, that they have the authentic information that we do not have. All part of a larger scheme. It's not a shock to no one, but it really is the populist autocratic dictator playbook. It benefits them to have a very undereducated base. And to Reese's points, absolutely, this is also about undoing everything that had anything to do with civil rights.
Look, sis, you're North Carolina, and the same thing. We talk about education, resources, oversight, the ability to be able to collect data. That's the other thing. They don't want to collect data. So when you talk about inequities, when you talk about the issues that we have, when you don't have the data, then you don't even know what the hell is going on. You don't even know how do you achieve parity, because they don't want that. They just sort of throw out these phrases. We're just going to send the money to the states. But these same states, these right wingers, they don't want the data. They don't want to be able to know what the inequities are.
And what we do know here in North Carolina, $1.6 billion of federal funding from the Department of Education comes here. And we know that affects kids for Title I, IDEA, kids with disability. And we also know that the kids that are going to be affected the most by all of this is kids that live in rural areas. That is the data that we have right now. So also don't forget about federal loans, grants. So we're talking about community colleges. We're also talking about how this is going to impact teachers on a community college level, which I work at a community college. So I want to go back. I may be moving too far ahead, but when Chuck Schumer, what he did, this is why I say, with all due respect, let the motherfucker burn. That's how I look at it, because we have said this is what's going to happen. It is going to impact us the most. But it seems like the only damn way that this country is going to pay attention is if this country falls a little.
Well, listen, people need to understand what is going on. This is going to continue. There's going to be more of this. And I'm going to say it again, Reese. I don't care what anybody says. We understand. We know what's going on. Black people are very clear. White folk are going to have to get pissed off and outraged for them to understand what's really at stake. Because there was an analysis done on MSNBC. 71% of the electorate in the 2024 election, and we're going to talk about this with Terrence Woodbury, 71% of the 2024 electorate was white.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and they are starting to get pissed off, but the question is, will that translate into a change and a shift in voting patterns? Will that cause some of them to stay home if they can't hold their nose and vote for Democrats? Will that cause some of them to shift in the way that people like to pretend, like Black people shifting from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party was all some mindless zombieism that we were infected by, as opposed to an act of self-preservation? What the Republicans have shown, and I've said this many times, is that they are waging war on white people. Black people are the byproduct. We are the collateral damage of it. But this is really about redistributing wealth. It is about cutting off the ability to that ability to climb the ladder, the income ladder, the educational ladder, because it's more of them than there are of us. And this is going to impact states where we're not very well represented in. Black people ain't in but 6, 7, 18 places, okay? And we have a big ass country where there are not us in those spaces that are gonna be harmed. As political said, rural areas are gonna be impacted. And yes, we know we have Black people in rural areas, but a lot of this country is rural and very, very white. The Appalachia is very, very white. And so when they realize that they have to stop selling our civil rights, meaning Black people and people of color civil rights and LGBTQ people civil rights, down the river so that they can feel like they have some more power and authority, when they realize that that bargain that they're making with the Republican Party is hurting them more than anything, maybe we'll see a change. And in the meantime, we gotta buckle up and ride this as best as we can, like we always have.
political sense, you're seeing that in North Carolina, all these white folks who voted for Trump, what did he do when it came to additional hurricane relief? We're good. Same as in Georgia.
And he's ready to slash funding now when it comes to hurricane funding. He's ready to slash that right now. I know our governor, Josh Stein, just signed a bill that is directing money towards hurricane victims because we're still suffering from that. But yeah, it's going to be a great impact. They do not see it yet. Some are seeing it, but like Reese said, it's a matter of how many people, how long is it going to take? And with all due respect, when I say let this shit just fall, because they don't get it. They still think here in North Carolina, which is a purple state, they still think that it's going to affect us the most. Like Reese said, in rural areas, the majority of people that live in rural areas are white, poor white folks, who a lot of them don't have transportation, by the way. So good luck with private schools on getting your children there.
Yes, sir.
Well, folks need to understand, you are seeing the destruction of civilized society. This is all about oligarchs. It's all about the rich. It's all about billionaires. It's all about white suburban communities. And folks had better understand that as best as they can.
Greetings, Lemon Nation. I'm Monique Presley here with The Week with Monique. I'm coming to talk to you today about the ongoing actions of the Trump administration and Elon Musk to tear away from us the things that matter the most to us, for the people who matter the most to us, our children, their educations. If you haven't heard, yesterday, President Trump fulfilled another one of his hideous, horrendous, demonic campaign promises by signing an executive order attempting to abolish the Department of Education. Why am I saying attempting? I'll get to that a little bit later, but first, let me read for you a little bit of what he walked in and signed yesterday with children assembled around him for props. The improving education outcomes by empowering parents, states, and communities, executive order. And it goes through all of the woes of what's happening in the educational system. It's no news to anybody that our educational system needs to improve, that our children need better quality education than what they've been currently getting, and that there are many things that the government could do to make that happen. But instead of doing any of those things, the answer of this president is to just completely wash the federal government's hands of their role, their responsibility for providing our children an education. He says in part, the Secretary of Education shall close the Department of Education and return authority to the states. The Secretary of Education shall, to the maximum extent appropriate and permitted by law, take all necessary steps to facilitate the closure of the Department of Education and return authority over education to the states and local communities while ensuring the effective and uninterrupted delivery of services, programs, and benefits on which Americans rely. The B clause. Consistent with the Department of Education's authorities, the Secretary of Education shall ensure that the allocation of any federal Department of Education funds is subject to rigorous compliance with the federal law and administration policy, including the requirement that any program or activity receiving federal assistance terminate illegal discrimination obscured under the label diversity, equity, and inclusion, or similar terms and programs promoting gender ideology. They end with some whereas and some so forth, but they give no instructions on how the actions that are currently being handled by the federal government through the Department of Education are going to be disseminated to be handled through the states. No specific instructions about how every dime that's currently being spent on our children by the federal government will be handed to the states to ensure that there is continuation, continuity of services. No instruction whatsoever. Instead, they're adding this B clause where it looks like whether the federal assistance is going to continue or not depends upon whether it's considered DEI, whether it helps gender ideology, whether it passes muster based on this administration's own unique tests. Now, the part about the responsibility and the opportunity to educate our children going to the States, that might sound good to you. Or maybe you know that a large percentage of the funding for education is provided state by state by state. But you might not have any idea how much the federal government does through the Department of Education. You might not have any idea of how important it is, not just to people other than you, but to you, to your family, to your children. Did you know that the Department of Education controls a budget of $268 billion? That the Department of Education sends roughly $33 billion to public schools for low-income students and children with disabilities? $33 billion. Did you know that the Department's Office for Civil Rights enforces laws that aim to prevent discrimination? That the department provides 12 million plus students with grants, loans, and work study programs. That it oversees $1.6 trillion in student loan debt. Now, before yesterday even happened, before that executive order saying, gut it, happened, they had already sliced and diced and eliminated thousands of employees. On January 20th, the Department of Education had 4,133 employees. Today, well, at least yesterday, roughly 2,183 employees. So that means if you've got a kid who's getting ready to go to college, you're filling out that FAFSA, you're trying to figure out what age you're going to be able to qualify for, what work study programs you're going to be able to get, all of the things that are processed through the federal government that are still going to be processed through the federal government, half the employees or less to try to get that done. Maybe you're one of the students who's depending upon disability services, or maybe you've just got a child in public schools. Did you know that 90% of American students go to public schools, and that 95% of students with disabilities go to public schools? Did you know that the budgets for services like art classes, music, after school programs, Head Start, those funds are what the federal government is currently supplementing, roughly 20% of any state's budget. Did you know that 400,000 educator jobs are funded by the federal government? Now, I don't mind telling you, this is uniquely personal to me, not just because I have children, but because one of the millions of children who depend on the federal government's services, one of the 95% of students with disabilities who depend on IDEA services by the federal government, is my oldest child. For the past 17 years, since my son was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, his father and I have been part of this rigorous, painful roller coaster of making sure that our son receives the free and appropriate public education that by law he is entitled to. So for us to have a president who frankly just doesn't give a damn about children with disabilities and ensuring that they get their services, and making sure that even in all of this disruption, that the roughly $33 billion that's going to these schools in order to make sure that children on the spectrum, like my child or yours, that children who need speech therapy, who need occupational therapy, who need physical therapy, are getting those services to make sure that they are treated with dignity and respect and that they are empowered to be able to live thriving lives, to receive education that is appropriate for them. We have a president of the United States who just says, I don't care. I don't care what the hell happens to you. I don't care what happens to your family. And there's three reasons for that. Maybe four, but I'm gonna give you three. The first of which is we are dealing with the president of the United States who has no idea what it is to be you or to be me. There's a billionaire class of entitlement in this country, and specifically with this president and with his partner in crime, Elon Musk, that has no clue what it is like to have financial need and has no empathy, no compassion, no realm of understanding or desire to understand what it would mean to need something that money can't provide. So when they look out at us, they see a class that can be subbed, that can be oppressed, that can be kept low by not providing education, by not ensuring that our children have what they need to thrive. In no area do we see it more so than in the desire to keep us dumb. They want you stupid. They want you not knowing any better, because when you know better, you do better. And there is a class in this country that desires to maintain power at all costs. So when you see anti-intellectualism, that's what it is, rear its ugly head in this country, they want you dumb. No, they don't deserve the same education as anybody else. No, Kennedy Center, access to arts and culture, we're gonna control that. That's what an autocrat does. That's what a totalitarian does. They desire to create an underclass, a class and caste system in which there's only one set of people who can get ahead, who can ascend, who can make money, who can keep money, and everybody else works for them. We can't let it happen. But the reason why I keep saying attempt, and I want you to understand that what Trump did yesterday, as hideous as it is, what he actually is trying to do is illegal. The Department of Education was founded through an enactment of law by the United States Congress, and it cannot be abolished except by action of Congress. And there are not enough votes, nor is there enough will in the House of Representatives and in the Senate to abolish the Department of Education, because those members know that their constituents, who are right now mad as hell, are gonna be furious if this ever gets enacted. And that's their job security on the line. So no, he cannot legally abolish the Department of Education. And right now there are attorneys general like Tish James and others across the country who are filing lawsuits in order to prevent his efforts. But the pandemonium, the panic, the disruption of services, the lives of educators, the interruption of services as school systems are trying to plan their budgets, not knowing how much money they're going to have, the things that they're terminating right now, lunch for children who only get maybe the breakfast and lunch that they get at school because there's not enough money to eat at home, Head Start programs for poor communities, for low-income communities, black, white, brown. That's what's on the line. Services for disabled children. We have to stop him. And the National Education Association is asking for us to do three specific things. One, call your House rep. You can text PROTECT to 48744 to get connected to your representative. The National Education Association will connect you and provide talking points. Two, you can share the information on social media. Help explain to friends and family why our students and schools need a fully operational Department of Education. You can visit nea.org/protect. And you can share an article, a graphic, or a video. And third, you can urge your friends to act. Ask them to text ACTION to 48744 for NEA updates and ways to take action. A quick text or email from you makes all the difference. If you're watching me now, you got a phone, you got the internet, you got a platform, please use it. So they can't make you dumb. So they can't keep you ignorant. Now's the time that we've got to fight back.
So what's up, Joy? Here we go, y'all. Y'all ready? Joy, I had like 2.5 hours sleep last night. I was in here working on, I'm trying to fancy up my little home studio, and I was up working all night trying to get this camera to work. And then Tim comes downstairs at 4 o'clock. He goes, Don, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing? And I'm like, nothing. I'm working. Leave me alone.
Well, I went to bed an hour before you. So tell Tim it's not just you. It's me. Jason and Tim could have a group chat. Like, they might need a group chat. I think our hubbies need a group chat.
I can barely complete. You know, when you get, I'm so tired. I used to have to go on TV like this. And now I'm here. I can't even put 2 sentences together. But let me, Joy, what the hell happened? What happened?
Should I turn the light on? It's like the light. Why is it sunny where you are and dark where I am? Isn't that weird?
Oh, it's just light. It's just my, I was working on my lighting last night. I got diffusers and all kinds of stuff.
I'm turning my light on because it's so dark. Okay.
See, now the light's coming on. We're fixing to find out what happened.
Turn the lights on.
So Joy, what happened? Because I thought you were going to be there. There was reporting. I understand you can't go into specific on certain things because we have contractual obligations.
That's right.
People. And sometimes people are like, well, why haven't you found a job yet? We have like non-competes and shit. Like, you guys have no idea what's happening. So we have to make our own way in this world in a way where we can still collect our kerns and have other kerns on top of that. So, yeah. Joy, what happened at the MSNBC?
Because weirdly enough, the car note people still want their money.
I know. And the mortgage people
are like, we still going to need that money.
Yeah.
We still need to pay. Right. And I think it is funny because I think people assume that if you're on TV, you're like independently wealthy and you don't have to pay bills. No, we still have to pay bills, y'all. It's a job. It's a normal job. So, you know, it was a surprise. I will say that. I think I can, you know, without violating any terms of my contract, I think I can say that I was surprised because a week before any of this happened, you know, the last communications I was having with, you know, the PR folks at work were that we had won the NAACP Image Award for the readout for the show. And that I'd won for the book for Medgar and Murley as well. But that, you know, we just won an NAACP Image Award literally for the readout. And it was we were really super proud of it because it was the Brittany Griner interview was what we submitted to NAACP Image Award. And I felt like that interview and being blessed to have her choose us to do her first interview when she came out of that Russian gulag where she had been locked up for this nightmare. And I know you and I both read that book and it was just a terrifying ordeal. Mm-hmm. And so we were really proud. And I was very proud of what the things we were doing on the readout that stepped out of the basic. You know, we tried to really go deep on history, go deep on things that aren't comfortable to talk about, like Christian nationalism, white Christian nationalism, which really is plaguing our country. And when I would do that, I didn't do it from a point of view of, hey, this is the black lady talking about white Christians. I would have on Robbie Jones, who is my friend from Public Religion Research Institute, the foremost scholar on white Christian nationalism and himself a white Christian. Like, we really tried to be smart about doing deep dives on things that you see in the news and you're like, why is that happening? And try to make connections for people. So I really genuinely didn't see it coming. None of my team did. And this leak happens the night of the Friday night, this leak just drops. Dylan Byers, former CNN guy former CNN guy who now does a Substack, I think, drops this leak. And we were just like, I'm thinking that doesn't even seem right because I really just re-signed my contract. So you know, I just signed again this year. So I couldn't really tell you. I can't explain what happened because I can't get in the heads of my bosses. But then I got the confirmation that Saturday, and that was that.
Yeah. So, look, I've never said this, but I'd just gotten the White House Correspondents' Dinner invitation from, you know, from management to go. And I was like, okay, this is cool, whatever. And then, let's see, I was sitting, Tim was out of town at a conference, and I was sitting in a restaurant by myself, and the monitors were on, and they made an announcement about Charles and Gail. And I'm like, well, that came fast out of nowhere. That was really rushed.
Right.
And then I went back to work after that weekend, and that's when I went to work on a Monday, and then they called me after I was like, had already gone to work.
Wow.
And someone called me from the team, one of the crew guys, and said, you know, I wanted to tell you on Monday, I was wondering why they had taken your name off the wall of the studio.
Wow.
With all of the, and I didn't even know it. So other people knew before I did.
Wow.
Which was, yeah.
I think the only reason other people quote unquote kind of knew before I did is because that leak, and I, you know, I'm very anti-leak. I don't leak. I try to be very careful about it. We're journalists, so we know not to talk to journalists. You know what I mean? Like, I'm very careful about that.
Yeah, you were like, I was like, Joy, what's going on? I'm hearing things.
I wouldn't leak to Don, and Don is my friend in real life.
You will not leak. She wouldn't say, I was like, Joy, what's going on? Talk to me. She goes, oh, I'm good. I'm like, okay.
I promise you all, Don and Don, like I said, we are friends, and I was like, I wouldn't even leak to Don. Like, that's, I don't leak. I just don't do it. So when that leak came out, members of my team who read Puck or who are subscribed to it saw it and started panicking because, you know, it was so out of left field and out of the blue. And again, because we had just won the award and everything seemed so fine that, you know, there was nothing that had happened, nothing that had presaged it. So it definitely was out of the blue. And like you said, what happens is it starts to become a rumor, and you're not sure whether the rumor is real until you get the actual phone call saying it's real. And so you don't know really how to respond to it in advance of that. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. I think that, you know, it's not the way I would have done things, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, you can't respond, like, contractually you can't respond.
I cannot.
We're not supposed to talk to the media. Right. And so.
Right. And I don't.
Which actually, I believe, puts corporations or companies in a position, I think, well, it puts the employee in an unfair position because we can't defend ourselves. And then if you do defend yourself, they'll say, oh, you're leaking or you shouldn't be talking and you violated your contract. And it's like, and, you know, a lot of the things that you read, most of what you read has been planted by people. And it is not necessarily true, but the people who write the first draft gets to write the narrative because everybody else, the reporters are lazy. They just go and they write the same story over and over. They don't even call for a comment. And it's like, and even if they do, you're like, I can't talk about it. So they end up believing what other people have planted and leaked about you, whether it's other people or whether it's a company or whether it's a PR, whoever it is. I'm just saying, I'm not
saying.
You
don't know. Yeah. Because no one knows where they come from. I mean, only the
know where they come from.
I don't know where they come from. I don't know.
In order to get, let me be real. You want to get rid of a black woman at a company. I'm just saying any company. You want to get rid of a gay black man at any company, you have got to come up with a narrative and a predicate to do it, and you have to try to destroy them in order, because then you don't want people going, they're going to sue us for racism, and they're right. No, you have to try to destroy their personality and their credibility, and that's all I have to say. And you know, I'm going to tell it like it is, okay? And so I don't like that. I don't like it when that happens to people. I just think it's unfair. So I'm telling you, I'm not bitter. I don't think you're bitter, but just don't believe everything you read. And I wish the best for my colleagues at CNN. I love them. I miss them terribly. But the truth is the truth, and the truth will make you free. That's all I have to say. I
have no comment further about it. All I can really say is that one of the things that I do that I have to say, and I think it is important to say, is you know, one of the great things about MSNBC that I will say something really positive is that the way that we all moved as friends, you know, Rachel, Nicole, Alex, Steph Rule, you know, Lawrence, the beloved Lawrence. We actually dig each other. Like, we actually really like each other. You know what I mean? And it's like, you can't fake that, you know? And I think it's so important that people understand that the on-air chemistry that you saw, Chris Hayes, all of us, when we're sitting around that set, you know, and all chilling, that was real. Like, we actually didn't fake that. You know what I mean? Like, we actually, we really are cool. We're actually still cool. We're friends. You know, it's, and it was just, it's a weird, it's a thing that is like a magic that can happen when executives are picking random people, right? And they're people who come from all different walks of life. We're different political parties, different political ideologies. It is actually a science and an art to put those people together and have them actually have chemistry, right? Like, you and I have chemistry because we know each other and we're cool and friendly. You can't invent that. Like, you couldn't make us pretend to be friends. You see what I'm saying?
Right,
so
right.
I have to give you know, the company, the, you know, it was, and it, at least in my era, you know, it was Phil Griffin who was in charge at that time. But you know, whatever, it just, I feel like there was a magic that definitely happened at MSNBC that somehow caused all these very different, unique people to just have this great bond. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And I'm very proud to have been a part of that. I'm very happy to have been able to experience that in my professional life.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a cool thing. You know, I'm still friends with some of my people from Radio 1 back in the day. You know what I mean? Some of my Radio 1 people, I'm still with them as well. Like, you can, when you create those kind of relationships, you know, Rev is my big brother, you know, then I knew him when we were on radio. So it's like,
I'm doing something for him for the NAND conference.
Yeah, exactly. Katie Fang, that's my girl. You know what I mean? Like, it's like we, and even people who used to be there, Tiffany Cross, that's my sister. It's like, you know, Melissa Harris Perry, that's my sister. Like, we've created these relationships that are real. And I think it's important to know that that's real. And don't feel like you were played to the left over the last, you know, was I there 14 years? You weren't. We really were cool.
Yeah, and I do have to say, look, when you work at an organization like a CNN and MSNBC, it really is an honor and a privilege to have been there. And it was great, like the best in the world.
Yeah.
CNN, it's like, if something happens internationally, it's over.
Listen.
MSNBC cannot compete with that. You know that, right?
Listen, Christiane Amanpour, I never met Christiane Amanpour until last year. Our show, we got nominated for an Emmy. I was so excited. So we went to the News Emmys, and Christiane Amanpour was there. And I was like, I'm like such a stan. Like, the way people would be if they saw Beyonce, that's how I am when I met Christiane Amanpour. I was like that the first time I met you. So you don't remember. I stand out on you. The first time I met you, David Wilson introduced us at an event. And you, I hope you don't remember because I was embarrassing. I said, oh my God, Dolph Lemon, I'm such a big fan. You're probably like, get out. You're like, who are you, crazy weirdo? But I was like, Dolph Lemon, oh my God.
I'm old. I've been around. No, Joy, I've just been in awe of you, and I've watched your show, and I just go, wow, this is so well produced, and you were so bold, and I know people would get upset. And so, look, I have you, and we're going there, and people are going to write about it and talk about it. Did it have anything, let's just say yes or no. I don't want to answer. Do you think there was any racism involved?
I have no evidence of anything. I don't know. Okay. I have no evidence. No.
Do you think it was your support of Palestine? Not that you were anti-Israel, but was it, you think it any that had anything to do with it?
I have no idea. Like I said, I refuse to try to get into the brains of other people. I don't know. I genuinely have to be honest. I'm not making this up. I'm not spinning. I have no idea. I think they made a decision. The decision has been made. That's all I can say. People made a decision. The decision's been made. I don't know why.